We're out of practice with this. My name is Reverend Matt. My pronouns are he and him. We welcome you all to our service, especially of those of you that are searching for a spiritual home. Many of us once were too, seeking for something larger than ourselves to which we could belong, a sense of rootedness to hold us as we create meaning together. We do that pretty well here, even virtually, although not perfectly. In this congregation, we strive not for perfection, but for authenticity and connection. Whether it's your first time with us or your 100th time, we hope that you'll find here questions that stretch you, people to befriend you, and values that challenge you to join us in loving boldly, living justly, and welcoming openly. We have a few announcements before we begin. The parent caregiver group, which was supposed to happen right after the service today, will be rescheduled. I'm excited about that. Next Sunday is Soup Sunday. Please join us after the service for lunch and conversation. A sign-up link will be sent in Prairie News. Oh, every time a chat comes up, I lose my script. Hold on. All right. Suggested donation, $5 for adults. Visitors, newcomers, and kids are always eat for free. We have an exciting announcement. We have a new hospitality chair, Evan Fisher. The board officially voted for Evan to serve as hospitality chair at the January meeting last week. He's replacing Nancy Wonderland, who, as most of you know, thankfully signed up to be our new administrator, office administrator. So thank you, Evan, for taking on this important role. There will be a memorial service for longtime and beloved member Rose Smith next Saturday, February 4th at 3 p.m. In the meeting hall. Food will be served after the service. And there may be some more orders in the more announcements in the order of service and the news of the week email that you would have received on Friday. Our chalice lighting today is by the Reverend Joan Johnson Lewis. It says, as we light our candles this week, we imagine the lights that shine within each of us. We each have intention, we each have experience, we each have thoughts, we each have feelings, and we each have wisdom. May these candles remind us to be in touch with those best and most unique lights of our own being, and to bring them into this room today and into all that we do in the world. That was the candle here. We will now have a moment of silent meditation. I don't have a chime with me, but I think Renee has one. And she will bring the chime to begin us and ring the chime again for us to have some time to center ourselves. Renee, if you could take care of that for me, please.
Did my chime work? Just pretend it worked. I did a chime.
All right. I know I needed that that little moment to center because I've been running around this morning. So grateful for that. Our opening music this morning is Winter Song by Sarah Bareilles and Ingrid Michaelson. Note that the lyrics are "Is love alive?" and not "Is love a lie?" as Renee initially thought. That's what it says. Is love alive?
This is my winter song to you. The storm is coming soon. It rolls in from the sea. My voice a beacon in the night. My words will be your light to carry you to me. Is love alive? Is love alive? Is love? They say that things just we cannot hold. Is love alive? Is love alive? Is love alive? Ooh, this is my winter song. December never felt so wrong. 'Cause you're not where you belong. Inside.
It's just beautiful. Thank you. Our story for all ages this morning is Unplugged by Steve Antony. And I believe it's going to be read by our DRE Alice.
By Steve Antony. Hello, Blip. Blip liked being plugged into her computer. On her computer, Blip learned new things, played fun games, danced to music, and visited faraway places all day long. But one day, there was a blackout, and Blip tripped over her wire. She tumbled all the way down the stairs and out the front door. Blip toppled down a steep, grassy hill, rolled through a forest of very tall trees, and drifted down a long, winding river. Blip was outside. Outside, Blip learned new things, played fun games, danced to music, and visited far away places all day long. But it was getting late. Blip sailed back up the long winding river and walked back through the forest of very tall trees and climbed back up the steep grassy hill, where she said goodbye to her new friends. Blip walked all the way upstairs and plug back into her computer. Blip liked being plugged into her computer, but all she could think about was how great it was to be unplugged. The end.
Well, now that's some truth. I think the children's stories always have the greatest wisdom. All right. Our presentation today is one that I've been very much looking forward to as the parent of a 14-year-old and the caregiver of a 16-year-old. Our presentation today is Information and Information Impacts on Youth by Layla Coleman and relates to our fourth principle, a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. Layla Coleman is an educator with 15 years of experience coaching, mentoring, and teaching students and adult learners in all aspects of critical thinking, reading, and literacy. As a current library and information studies graduate student, she seeks to learn more about how individuals are engaging with information and learning differently in the digital age, and studies information literacy as a social practice, information literacy in pre-adolescence and adolescence, and how individuals are engaging with mis- and disinformation in ever-changing information ecosystems. She's also the daughter-in-law of Prairie members Barbara and Robert Park, Bob Park, and wife to partner Ian Park, dog mom to Griffey, and a seventh-generation Wisconsinite who, somehow, feels most at home by the ocean. Welcome, Layla. It's nice to meet you.
Thank you so much, and good morning, Prairie community. It is just a joy to be with you this morning. So I'm glad that we could all, again, be very adaptable and flexible and kind of flip the script to be in a digital space, which is kind of entertaining since that's part of our topic today. So just a few words of kind of the framing of what I'm going to bring to us today. As mentioned, I'm studying information, that big word that's hard to define, but also specifically misinformation and something called information literacy. And I'm really curious about that and how it presents in our youth. So what I'm going to share with you all, some of it comes from academic literature and spaces where I am studying myself, again, engaging in some research and taking in that literature. Some of it today is really coming from just our media and news sources and what we're learning about our youth and how social media is really shaping their worlds, right? For those of us who did not grow up with social media applications at our fingertips as adolescents or pre-adolescents, it's a very different way of engaging. Today, we're going to just kind of talk about it broadly. Is this a threat? Is this a tool? Kind of how is social media being shaped or viewed? How prevalent it is for our young people or youth today? And then I'm really going to just look and share with us some of the positive aspects and ways that youth are accessing information via these tools and spaces. And then some of the negative ways, right? Or some of the dangers or issues or concerns. Again, at any time, if we have any glitches or anything technical, please feel free to stop me. Otherwise, we'll have space to engage in some discussion towards the end. Okay. So just a couple of definitions. Again, this term misinformation gets thrown around a lot. And really, in its simplest ways, that's just information that's been shown to be inaccurate. Also, young people or youth today, when I refer to those terms, or use pre-adolescence and adolescence, we're really looking at the age range of about 10 to 19 years of age, though there's lots of thoughts out there also about when does youth or the term young people end. And also, again, you know, just what is information? This is a term that's very challenging to define, but a couple of definitions that are out there include stimuli that has meaning in some context to a receiver, or even just an abstract concept that refers to that which has the power to inform. So again, a big, crazy, wild term, but it's what we're looking at, how information and misinformation is taken in by our youth. So one place to start is really to think about social media. And again, which is an application or a space where people are engaging, creating, sharing, exchanging information, exchanging ideas, creating community or connection, and sometimes increasingly using these spaces to be entertained as well, right? But so in those social media spaces, are they threats? Are they very dangerous? Or are they tools for us? Some people would view these as some of the greatest assets that we have right now in the global community, as far as ways that humans are able to connect. Time and time again, we are seeing that voices that have been oppressed, marginalized, and silenced have found outlets through social media tools. And almost anyone can create an app, can create an account, can share anything, can post it or record something, right? Again, so creating more flat structures of whose voices get to be heard in these spaces. At the same time, we also see a lot more citizen journalism. We see discrediting of professional journalism. We see misinformation, disinformation, organized campaigns, and skepticism, again, that are eroding trust in each other as well as in institutions as this type of misinformation continues to get spread and can spread very, very quickly. Any literature that you read around social media will often even start with, the widespread of social media creates a very easy access and very quickly allows us to spread information of any kind, right? So it's that very quick turnaround that sometimes is in flux here. But what's going on with our young people, right? So we have all these social media applications out in the ether, and what are youth engaging with? Some of you, if you're parents or caregivers or engaged with youth, know this very, very well. But for those of us who might not, just a lot of statistics and some interesting factual points for us this morning. First of all, it's no surprise to many of us that these are spaces where young people share. They are immediate, they are low cost or free, private, hidden forms of communication. They allow that young people to make, again, these connections. And so it's a destination, especially for adolescents and pre-adolescents. Some of the statistics I'm going to share to you right now come from a Pew report that came out in late 2022. So this was research that was done early last year. But on some of the bigger social media platforms that we hear a lot about or may engage with ourselves, 95% of youth are on YouTube, 67% are on TikTok, 62% on Instagram, 59% on Snapchat, and then some of the other big entities kind of fall down from there. Facebook, Twitter, Twitch, WhatsApp, Reddit, Tumblr kind of round us out. More interesting here is what they are doing and how much they're engaging on these apps, right? So about 15 to 20% of our young people report that they are using one of those big four almost constantly. So YouTube or TikTok or Instagram or Snapchat almost constantly, right? And also young people from this study last year are telling us that they are online almost constantly. So that would be more inclusive beyond just our social media spaces, but about 46 to 48% of youth say they are online all the time, constantly. And that is up, has more than doubled in about the last 7 or 8 years. So we're just continuing to see more and more engagement in these digital spaces. That's where our young people are spending their time. More specifically, just to give us one example of what that might look like, TikTok, which is a social media and entertainment app that has exploded in its popularity in the last couple of years. On average, right, a person who is 10 to 19 years old is going to open that app 9 or 10 times a day. They are going to spend an average of 90 minutes there. I know a lot of young people who don't spend 90 minutes eating in a day, right? Or perhaps moving their bodies. So 90 minutes becomes a lot of time. And that's just an average, right? So we know a lot more youth are spending more and more time there, and some are definitely spending less. And a couple other things to note just about the prevalence of social media for our youth. Teens in lower income households are much less likely to have a computer or have a gaming console or a physical space that they're using for social media and or their online use. They're much more likely to have a smartphone, right? They're much more likely to be engaging with the social media apps in that manner. And this is really another great point to think about, is like that this is where they get their information. So while some of us might use credited news sources and go to those websites or still read print newspapers or watch the news via television, again, whether that's cable news, local news, public news, our young people are not getting information in that way, right? News, cultural events, ongoings, other issues that are important to them, issues to the world, they are receiving that information through social media, right? It's faster, it's instant, it comes from peers, right? And so if that information is accurate or inaccurate, sometimes isn't as valuable as I see it in my feed. I see it as I'm moving through TikTok. I see it as the next thing that pops up for me as I'm scrolling through YouTube. So this, I think, is a really important and interesting point, right? Of, again, where is information coming from? And it's coming from spaces that, again, as the name suggests, are social in nature, right? So we're there for social purposes first, perhaps even for entertainment. But at the same time, the information we're getting about the world, about life, about what's happening, is coming to us through those mediums. It's a very different form of intake. And the last thing just to note about kind of prevalence for our youth, right, around social media and how information and misinformation are coming at them or how they're encountering it, is really thinking about how much this is changing. It's changing so quickly. Again, much of the literature I use for today and in other forms of my research, if it's more than a couple of years old, things have moved on significantly, right? Studies done in 2014 or 15 can even seem obsolete, which is a wild thing to think about. But it's changing so quickly. TikTok's popularity, for instance, increased in just the last several years. It is the most downloaded app, I believe, at this point, again, and has the most users worldwide. Not as many daily active users as YouTube, but again, the widest audience. But it or an app such as Snapchat might disappear within the year due to legal concerns, financial concerns. In 5 years, if we were together and I was talking about this, this topic again, I can almost guarantee you that there will be two different social media platforms that we would be talking about, because our youth would have engaged and found and explored new applications that fit their needs and fit their wants for information and entertainment in better ways. So again, the last kind of two chunks of what I wanted to share today are really about the positive ways that our youth are accessing information and using these spaces, right? So then the types of apps that I mentioned by name, again, but how they're engaging with those, and then some of the more concerning ways or negative implications of this much social media use. And the framing here for you really is going to be, is primarily social or effective. There's also lots of ways we could look at these things very legally, and we'll touch on that, or cognitively, with how that might be shaping brains of our youth. But really today here, I want to talk about kind of that a more emotional, social, and effective way that we're seeing these implications of social media. So first, again, this is pulling from some more recent literature that 8 out of 10 teens say that what they see on social media makes them feel more connected to what's going on in their friends' lives. 71% say it is a place where they can show their creative side. And apps such as, again, TikTok promote this, right? Video creation, visual creation via something like Instagram. There's spaces where, again, this exploration, this connectivity, and this creativity can really, really flourish. Also, when asked, youth report that this is not a negative space for them, right? About 9% would say that social media and their social media use is primarily negative, but most would report that it is not positive or negative for them. It's just something that's part of their life. It's what they do. And 32% of youth would say this is a very positive space for them, right? So when self-reporting, they do not see this as a space where it is highly negative. Another study shows us, again, when we're looking at like that, this emotional and social implications of heavy social media use, 44% do not feel better or worse after passive social media use, right? If they're just someone who's taking in information and content through these spaces, 46% felt better after they were engaging in social media, and about 10% again around there said that they felt worse. So they constantly connect with these spaces. And other things that people are exploring is how much social media is reducing feelings of isolation for our young people, how much it supports social connectedness to peers. And most interesting for me, I think one of these spaces is how social media supports construction of self, right? So identity forming occurs not just in the real world anymore for our young people, but online as well. This is a very important space where that construction of who I am, what I value, what I want to be, there's autonomy there for our young people. They have agency to engage in the ways that they want, share what they want, contribute what they want. So they can do that anytime and any way. And when you think about the limitations you may have, again, as someone who did not grow up with this space, the limitation I had geographically, financially, socially, those are just evaporated through something like social media. The other space and way that social media is so positive for our youth, or can be so positive, is the resources that it can provide access to. Again, this is a really interesting thing to think about in the world of information, how information is being shared, but access to information about topics that have traditionally been gatekept, such as sex, sexuality, gender, gender identity, gender expression, the realities of relationship, all of those topics are readily available. So information of all kinds, information from professionals, but also from peers, again, very accessible for our young people. Also access to just about anything, right? Instead of going to the physical library, right? Or in, again, take it back just a couple steps, trying to Google or trying to research online. If there's a topic in the life of a young person that you think they have not investigated, I'm here to say you might want to think again, because be it very fringe, be it very popular, they have explored that because that information is there, especially if it's information that other peers have been interested in as well. Varied perspectives regarding religion and politics, social issues and concerns, communities and that are there for them live that can support them or share about these different perspectives are valued. All of that can be found there. So again, if someone is coming from a family of origin that has one very specific take of the world, a completely different viewpoint can be found very, very easily. And then lastly, I think another just really positive concerning resources is how to do things, how to cook, how to sew, how to get a stain out of your shoes, how to meal prep or understand fitness routines or anything creative. I work as a part of my role on UW's campus with a small group of 19-year-olds. This is my second year with them. They learn how to do everything through these media apps, through TikTok, through Snapchat. And to be frank, most of us might say, if you're not sure how to do that, there's a YouTube video for that, right? So that's prevalent beyond our youth, but they are really, really learning in different ways through social media. And then lastly, the topic that I know is often one that's shared more widely or comes up more because it is such a concern. There are so many challenges and issues around social media. Just wanted to take a few minutes to talk about this question of, is it harmful? Like, how is misinformation happening here? How are social media applications in general playing a part in this harm to our youth? And there's a few very big buckets or topics here. Exposure is one. Data mining could be another one. And more importantly, and more my focus, the mental and emotional well-being of our youth. Just to kind of sidestep for a second, there also are just lots of legal implications that are happening here. So you might have seen some of these in the news in the last couple of years. Recent actions, for instance, again, an app such as TikTok, which I'm just using as my example today. The state of Illinois, for instance, last summer sued TikTok because it was accessing and gathering biometric data of youth and of all users without their consent. So things like our voice prints, our face prints, our scanning of our eyes, they were gathering that information and their privacy policy said that they did not do that, right? So they won that lawsuit. And then the social media platform just slipped that little sentence into their privacy policy. So now anyone on TikTok, that your biometric data is theirs. A current suit that's also out right now, just at the end of 2022, the state of Indiana also sued TikTok's algorithm, specifically making it because they state that it makes it impossible for children, and they're specifically looking here, children ages 10 to 16, to avoid explicit content. So under the Child Protection Act, again, they're suing this social media application saying that you're exposing young people to content they shouldn't see, even though your policy states that you don't do that. Another pretty common or well-known piece would be that the leak that happened again in 2021 around Meta, the larger company that owns both Facebook and Instagram, a former employee, Frances Hogan, I believe, testified that Meta knows that it leads young girls to anorexia content, right? That again, the way that the algorithms in the background work in that app lead young girls and young women down towards that type of content. It also had data that knowing that Instagram worsens body image issues in young girls and could increase thoughts of self-harm, right? So this was a whistleblower who came out and said, hey, this entity has this data. They have not made decisions based on this data. It's just something that's kept in house and we know that it's harming youth. Also, a really, you know, kind of silly, but really significant impact of social media of youth that are on it all the time is really time and time management and where it's taking their time, right? These are highly, highly addictive spaces. And while the average is reported, as I mentioned earlier, might be like 90 minutes per day, doesn't seem like much. Many young people are spending hours on apps. This was amplified greatly by the pandemic and by more time where we were limiting our physical social opportunities. So really, again, that's another thing to really think about here. Also, just the overall mental well-being and impact of comparison, right? While these are spaces where young people are able to engage, connect, find community, there is also a constant interest in, again, getting accreditation, getting likes, getting putting up content that isn't the truth, right? That is filtered and that is molded and shaped in certain ways. And so that comparison with others that becomes so strong, especially in adolescent spaces, can become a real danger to well-being. Misinformation is rampant on social media. I am actually engaged in a research project right now on this subject, on young people's own experiences with misinformation and what they're learning from each other and their peers. They're often not certain what is real, right? There's a lot of confusion. There's a lot of skepticism. They often do not fact check because if you're in app, and you're wanting to continue to scroll and see that content that's created just for you, you are much less likely to go outside of that app and check and see, is that actually the truth? Did that actually happen? There's also a culture of influencers, right? People getting paid to share product or values or views of a certain type with our young people. And that's constant. That's coming at them all the time. Misinformation also might be shared by young people because they think it's funny. It's entertaining. This was something new for me that I hadn't heard, but just again, the fact that while some views might say, oh, wow, we need to really eliminate all misinformation out there. There might be a whole space where our youth are sharing that type of thing because it's entertaining and humorous for them. So this really just touches the surface. And as you might expect from sharing these types of viewpoints, I really have almost no answers for any of us today around the social media, how it's impacting our youth, how much that information and misinformation is shifting or changing the game for them, because it's so varied and because there are so many experiences that our young people are really having. But I do have a few questions just to kind of leave us with, and then I think it'll be time to open up. So if social media is both benefiting and undermining adolescents' well-being, what should or could be done about it, right? Both are true. Also, you know, just again, I guess a caveat or an extra note here, we often hear about the relationship between young people and social media, and we most frequently hear about the challenges or issues that they face, right? Or how it can be causing harm. But I think it's really important to consider also all of the positives that social media is bringing to young people. This is what they self-report, and especially as this is the way that they're interacting with the world. And if that's foreign or unknown to some of us who don't interact with the world that way, I think it's really, really important to lead with curiosity, as that'll take us so much further in understanding, you know, what is this? How is this really shaping their experiences? Also, as for those of us who are non-young people here in our space today, it's important to acknowledge that social media is absolutely affecting how young people are moving through the world, creating relationships, maintaining and managing social relationships, and gathering information. It is a huge part of life for them. And while, again, it shapes it in such a different way. And then lastly, again, and this is a more of a legal switch in space, I think we're going to see a lot more conversation about this topic. And especially as it relates to Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act. Again, Section 230 is getting a lot of press because it is the policy, right, that says that entities who are not publishers, who just host content generated by others than that social media spaces, are not liable. They're not liable for almost anything under United States law. This is changing elsewhere around the world and is something that really may change here. So it's going to be something I think that we'll see people talking about a lot in the next few months and years, and really can have a lot of implications on how our young people are experiencing these spaces. And that is what I have prepared for us. Again, I know that was a lot of talking, but thank you so much for attention, you all. Again, just a few thoughts about our social media spaces and positive and less than positive impacts it's having for our youth.
All right. Thank you very much, Layla, for a very timely and important topic, which I bet many folks are going to have thoughts on. Now is the time that our community dedicates for discussion around the focus of today's service, relying upon our covenant of good relations as a guide to ensure that all voices are welcomed and relationships are valued. You can click on view and gallery view to see everyone on your screen. Please raise a virtual hand, which is located under the reactions button on Zoom. I will call on you and then unmute yourself and ask your question or comment. And remember that introducing yourself with names and pronouns is always welcomed. Karen.
Well, I'm going to start out with a positive that I've seen. As you guys know, I have a 21-year-old kid, and so I know a lot of young adults, many of whom you guys know too. And the benefits of online communities have been incredible during the pandemic. I mean, I can't imagine how isolated the college kids would have been because they, you know, they weren't able to eat together. They weren't able to get together. And I've also seen several of them who have found romantic partners and life partners online, you know, have had relationships where they didn't even meet the other person for quite a while. And then when they did, it, you know, the relationship continued. So I think there's, I'm glad that they have the social media at this point in life. That's all I have to say.
Thank you, Karen. Who else has some thoughts? I don't see anyone else. So while I'm waiting for others to collect them, their thoughts, I'd like to chime in. I talked to my daughter about this quite a bit. And one of the things that I was happily surprised about, she spends a lot of time on Discord, which is a space where people can create their own servers and invite their own communities and create their own communities. And one of the things that I loved was she said, you know, I said, how do you make sure you're staying safe? And she said, you know, the groups that I am drawn to tend to self-regulate themselves. And if somebody is treating people in a way that the group doesn't feel is healthy or respectful, then those people tend to get ostracized. And it occurred to me, first of all, that made me feel very happy that she was thinking in that way and frequenting sites with that intentionality. But it occurred to me very much so that those are lessons that she gained along the way from, I believe, through RE at her UU upbringing, right? Like she realizes that she has autonomy. She realizes that it's her responsibility to keep herself, you know, informed and try to put herself in spaces that are positive. And I'm concerned. I think my biggest concern with social media is that it is, it's of course profit-based. And the reason that it's so addictive is that the people that design these things, you know, use the research about gamification and the things that people get sucked into in gambling. And that's why it's like click, click, click. It's just like you're at a slot machine on this stuff, right? And that is not a foundation of intentional creation of healthy behavior in people. That's intentional, trying to get people to just be sucked in and become consumers and fodder for advertising. So I agree there are some benefits and I do see a lot of beautiful things happening. But my goodness, it does require a lot of intentionality and education and showing our youth. And I don't know that everybody gets access to that much help in terms of how to navigate this stuff. Although I bet our teachers are leading the way and kind of helping us with some of that stuff. So. Renee, I see your hand up.
So as a parent, it's like a lot of stress, more stress than my parents had, because when I was growing up, I'm kind of like on the border where I had some technology, but not all the social media aspects of it. So I feel that I have like a healthy skepticism of technology, but also I feel like I have the skills to navigate it fairly well. But it's, you know, questions for myself and my husband and with our kids, you know, at what point do they have cell phones? Am I going to require that I have all of their account logins? And the conversations about that I don't know that the schools are adequately preparing them for, as far as like anything that you email, text, post, even if it's in a private Discord or private space, assume that it could be public. Like just go off that assumption, because once you put something forth in the digital space, it can be screenshotted, it can be shared to anywhere. And you know, when kids are young and they don't have fully formed brains, they might say something or send something that in the heat of the moment or whatever, they don't think carefully about it. And that can really come back and haunt them their whole lives and can have major ramifications for getting a job or, you know, things like that. And then just the whole nervousness about like doxing, which is giving people's like full name and,
you know, address and things, and then people like come after them and get like death threats and all that stuff, is really scary. So we're going to have a lot of conversations with our children about being really careful about what they're posting, how much personal information they're giving. I want them to have the benefits of that social aspect, but also I'm really nervous. As some of you might know, I'm very careful with like posting our children's faces. So during the pandemic has been really nice because they're always wearing masks and pictures. But I really don't like posting their full face on social media, because there are stories where other people take those pictures and like pretend that they're different children and stuff, and all this weird things happen. So, you know, as a parent, I just feel like it's a lot more stressful raising children now with all this technology and social media that we have than what my parents and their parents didn't have to worry about it at all. Anyway, that's my thoughts on it.
All right. Thank you, Renee. Bob, I think your hand up is up next, and then Johanna.
I'm concerned about the corporate greed that seems to motivate all the big guys. And I'm wondering if there is a social media site that really deserves our support. Barb and I have recently joined a new news and social media site called post.news. And I'd like to read what the creator of that site says briefly, because I think it indicates maybe this is a site we should support. The creator says, "We believe that all humans are created equal, endowed with inalienable rights that include life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, regardless of their gender, identity, religion, ethnicity, race, sexual orientation, or beliefs. If you do not agree with this principle, post is not for you." So I'm using this site for announcing upcoming programs on our radio station.
Thank you, Bob. And I know you asked a question a while ago about whether or not Prairie should be using Facebook as one of our vehicles, and that engendered a really good conversation, which I think is going to continue to be ongoing, and we continue to look for ways to balance that the importance of being able to connect where folks are, but also being mindful of the vehicles that we're using. So it's greatly appreciated. Johanna,
I'll take my hand down. So I don't know. First, I just thought it was really interesting as Renee was speaking, Liam was listening with me and he's like, "Oh yeah, that's your digital footprint." And I was like, "Did you learn that in school?" And he was like, "No, I learned it online myself. I looked up how to be safe on social media before you let me download TikTok." So I do just want to give a shout out to our youth for being savvy digital natives. There are definitely things I'm very grateful that Facebook wasn't invented yet when I started college. And I also think that our kids, you know, growing up in this environment are going to have a very different way of approaching social media than I think those of us who came to it as, you know, later in life do, which is pretty cool. I was just curious, I know as we're for our speaker, as we're kind of, you know, talking about some of the research of the effects of social media on kids, I also thought it was really interesting that most kids said it was neutral or positive for their lives, whereas I find it to definitely be a negative for my life, so I'm trying to get off it. What kind of impacts does access to online communities have for kids who have families that are not supportive of things like their gender identity, sexual orientation, or other things like that, as, you know, an alternative that maybe when folks my age were coming up, you know, we did not have that as like another way to connect with supportive folks. Just curious if there's any research about that.
Yeah, I can respond to that. Johanna, thank you so much for the question. It's a great one. So what I brought today was from studies that were really much more general in approach, right? Looking at, again, what is happening in the most general senses. But one thing I did find in a lot of the literature I reviewed for today and recently is that there's a consensus from researchers that they really have to be more person specific, like individual specific, as they're doing this type of research to say like, hey, all adolescents are not the same. So we need to kind of think about additional factors again, to really, you know, disaggregate kind of our data and what we're looking at to say like, is this group of students or young people with a certain identity marker, like experiencing things in a much more positive or negative way per se. I will say just from more basic library studies too, it has been a really, really positive thing. The openness, again, for instance, for libraries having more physical books and concepts around queer youth, life, LGBTQ, friendly communities, all kinds of aspects. There's been a lot of research in the library world about how they are, that's a positive effect. I don't know any specific from the social media lens, but I would happily try to find that for you because this is the type of research people are doing too, right? Is much more narrowed how social media is impacting positively or negative, you know, youth for like specific topics, specific identity markers, things of that nature.
Thank you, Layla. Robin, I see your hand up.
I was wondering if, as with many societal things, this has a disparate impact depending on education and income. I'm not really worried about Johanna's kids or Renee's kids. We have certain education and resources. If the parents don't know about these things or they don't have time because they're working three jobs, the kids are alone after school, yeah, anywhere over 10 years old, it's quite likely, and they're not supposed to go anywhere. So what are they going to do with their time? Watching TV isn't really interesting anymore. If it can be on their phones or whatever they have, and it's a concern. Or there could be families of means, but where there's a dysfunctional family, that there's not a good relationships, that there's communication with the family, I could see how that could lead to the same sort of thing. So you know, most of our prairie kids have a lot of support that the rest of the community might not have.
Do that. All right, we're just about time. Anyone else before we move on? I don't see anyone. All right. Again, thank you, Layla. That was obviously a very timely and provocative topic, and greatly appreciate you being here. And I'm sure this conversation is going to continue offline and in discussion and ongoing over the years, because the stuff does not seem to be going away too soon, and it's kind of primary for our society. So thank you. All right. So we're going to move into our offering. We're sharing our offering this quarter with Just Dane, which runs Healing House, a place where homeless families can stay while a family member recovers from surgery. Just Dane also helps people returning to the community from prison. If you'd like to go to our website and press the give button, you can donate online. And I don't know if there's any music or anything for this section.
Maybe no.
Today. Okay, thank you very much. All right then. Our closing words then today will be read by Karen Deaton.
Karen, can you unmute yourself?
Yeah, I'll do that. Okay. I am a firm believer in the people. If given the truth, they can be depended upon to meet any national crisis. The great point is to bring them the real facts. That's what Abraham Lincoln said.
Indeed. All right, thank you. Our closing music today is number 346, Come Sing a Song with Me. It says virtual choir, and it says it's performed by Jess Hudeman.
So everyone needs to stay muted if you're singing, because it does not go well when a bunch of people sing virtually. So keep yourself muted, but you can, I think a lot of people know this song, and the lyrics will also be in the video itself as well. So you can go ahead and sing at home if you'd like to. Just gonna take me 1 second to share my screen.
that I might know your mind.
This time we are stopping the recording.